And we are live. This is Dark Journalists. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already. And I know Kat Goyt is out there running the ideas room tonight. And we're going to, you know, tonight's going to be a nice special report. We're going to do about an hour here on this kind of preview of things to come for 2022. And that includes the new NASA religion, of course, and COG action that we want to get into tonight. Of course, next Friday, we'll be back with the X Series episode, and Miss Olivia will be joining us for that. But she is going to wish you a very happy, happy 2022, as we all do here. One of the amazing things that we've seen is that as we got into this gallop toward the end of the year, we're getting into all these amazing stories coming up right at the end. Ghislaine Maxwell's trial, her being found guilty. We don't know what the sentence is yet. And we know that they've kept certain things out, including those really big connections, Prince Andrew and others. But nonetheless, the guilty verdict's very, very significant indeed. And NASA's call for, you know, studying the religion of space. Now, it's interesting because this story has come out. And I'm going to get deep into it tonight because they're running around all over the mainstream media trying to debunk this and keep it down after they all reported it. So that has the whole feel of this wasn't supposed to get out. And what exactly was it that was going on? Of course, we know we've seen this before with the Pope talking about baptizing aliens. So, you know, it's not exactly that much of a surprise. However, the creation of a new origin story for humanity is a major theme here on the X series, people like Gigi Young and Joseph Farrell having got into that. So we're going to look at it through new eyes, this unusual story. And we're also going to see what the big flip-flop is on that. We're also looking at some pretty major moves on the government side in relation to the ASRO and the Space Force. These things are particularly interesting because what you're going to notice is these are the kind of superficial public battles that they have while they keep the really advanced work that they've been doing around this for 75 years completely off the books. So we're going to get into that in our special report tonight. And then we have the whole curious part about welcome to the X blackout, because blackouts are going to be a major theme for 2022. And although they've been abused in prediction circles, as we know, one of the interesting things is there's a real strong strain of truth in the idea that they're already trying rolling blackouts as a way to introduce a climate tax. And this is a more kind of in-depth control measure than the COVID measures, believe it or not, as crazy as they have become. And we see that it's kind of a war between freedom-loving people and mandate lovers at the top. And that war is going on all over the globe. So there's really no way to hide from it. And the best way to engage this kind of thing is just to dismiss the mainstream media and try to find those sources out there that are trying to give you the real truth on this, because it's a crucial period and the narrative is everything right now, because the intense focus on that narrative. And that's also going to draw us into the UFO file, which is something they've been drawing us into very heavily now, ever since 2017. And the company TTSA, and I want to mention some key things about them tonight, including some of their financials and the fact that that op is pretty much defunct. I mean, they've crashed and burned, and they left a lot of the UFO community with egg on their face, and also those people that they raised $2 million from, of course, but they're $50 million in debt, and that's CIA-sized money, you know, and we can only imagine where that money probably came from funneling cocaine profits from Central America. You know, you have to think of it this way when you're dealing with the CIA being so close-knit with a company like that. And that's exactly why independent-minded communities who study alternative research or the UFO file need to stay far and away and should just draw a clear, clear line in relation to this. As we've pointed out in this program many times, most of them did not. And I think if they were going to make a New Year's resolution, it's kick the CIA out of the UFO file research. You're going to see that research splinter now that the mainstream has adopted it for purposes of promoting a threat. You're going to see it splinter into two different phases. So they have the CIA UFO disclosure, and then people who are, you know, in the ideas room, and from my perspective and some of the deep researchers, they're going to be going down that course of UFO file research, the Stan Friedman, Jim Mars kind of research, John Mack, for example. And I think that that's a real distinction, UFO file research versus this UFO, UAP, CIA thing. As a matter of fact, I actually think a real responsible researcher wouldn't even use the term UAP. Sometimes you're forced to just because you have to regurgitate the points that they have out when they're talking about it. But I think that that's part of the problem here. And of course, this is not a new term. As someone pointed out to me, I was aware of it, but they made a good point, which was that this term UAP is actually used in Kenneth Arnold's book, The Coming of the Saucers, and that's 1952. So hardly a new phrase there. And you have to wonder why they were doing this. And they just figured, oh, we'll rebrand the thing and then we'll stick people like Mellon and Tom DeLonge in there. Now, we've done a lot of research on them over the years, and in this past year in particular, on the Luis Elizondo op, we've put out quite a bit. But something major that I think we put out in relation to that was our interview with John Warner, which I highly recommend. And we put in our highlight reel for 2021 in the episode that we just did. And Warner, of course, the son of Senator Warner of Virginia. And also, you know, his stepmom was Elizabeth Taylor. But he has a new book out called Lion, Tiger, Bear, which is very interesting. And that is a novel. And, you know, this guy writes very interesting fiction, weaving in concepts we're very familiar with here. And I have a few books to recommend tonight. One of them I'm really getting into, and you can tell it's quite a powerhouse. It's Geoengineered Transhumanism. This is Alana Freeland's masterwork. It just came out, and we're going to have Alana on the show next week, and she's going to be breaking this down for us. I've been getting through it, and it's a hard book to put down because it's so advanced, and it gets into synthetic biology, AI, the fact that they're making us into walking cell towers. It's quite remarkable, and I can't recommend it enough. The other one I've really been enjoying is The Real Anthony Fauci, which is Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s latest book. And this is really, let me tell you, this is explosive, and it shows what a criminal that we're dealing with there at the top on this whole war on democracy. So those two I really can't recommend enough. And I already know that the Fauci book has become a best seller for RFK Jr. And it's amazing across the board here, you know, people on the right, people on the left, giving it really favorable and very kind of good reviews. I think it's a landmark. And one of the interesting things that we're seeing, and it's something that a former assistant HUD secretary, Catherine Austin Fitz, said when she was on the program last, which is, you know, it is a time for choosing. And you're seeing these incredible people on the field at this point, because we're in kind of what you would say is a war of narratives and a war of information, and finally a war of freedoms, which although it's not a shooting war at this point, and I don't see the point in it becoming a shooting war, but you can see that the establishment versus the people worldwide is going through an incredible seismic shift. And the people at the top are just, you know, the Davos crowd, the World Economic Forum, that whole group that we've been reporting on here as the kind of deep state elite, they've been moving forward with their operations. And so as we look at that, the big ace that they have in the hole and up their sleeve is the continuity of government emergency powers. And this is something that we need to get into tonight as well to cover it. And it's great to see so many familiar faces out there tonight. We'll be getting to your questions next week when Olivia's back. I'll try to catch a couple of questions at the very end and we'll try to do maybe an hour and a half here tonight. Okay, I want to start off with this controversy, though, over the NASA theologian piece. First of all, a series of stories came out, it's a major leak by a journalist saying NASA paid priests to figure out how to deal with aliens. Now, everyone from The Hill to Politico to New York Times was reporting this. And in fact, they had to get ahead of the story. And I think a lot of them were very much in favor of this. Look, in terms of suppressing information these days, they actually want things to get out because they have their own UFO op that they're moving right up their sleeve. And so therefore, the idea of them covering things up is more of a facade these days. Of course, we won't get the real story, but they're, you know, they have no problem talking about UFOs anymore because it's their weird CIA UFO disclosure operation. NASA used religious experts to predict how humans may react to aliens. 24 theologians were recruited by a NASA-funded program to assess societal implications for the agency's astrobiological and search for life efforts. Now, this is interesting. If you go back in our research, there's a famous meeting with Catherine Fitz being recruited by a Navy think tank to study the impact of the knowledge of extraterrestrial life on humanity. And when she was hesitant to join, one of the admirals involved said, "How would you like to lunch with some aliens?" So that sort of hangs out there, you know, in mid-space. And it's a weird thing because, of course, she didn't take the meeting. She thought it was some kind of weird setup. But you have to wonder what would have happened had she gone. So are we operating, you know, in a psyop, in a pure psyop? Are we operating in a field where they're in touch with off-world intelligences? And how does this relate to the X technology inside the UFO file? These are the types of things that, you know, we can get a real kind of clear picture of for 2022 based on the actions of 2021 and the things that they're moving into position on. And I have to say, you know, the fact that the TTSA operation is going down in flames is a perfect opportunity for the people who have been working around that to say, you know what, those guys were full of it. It was CIA junk. They were using doctored up CIA money. Like, let's move into a pure approach and just keep on that really good track, because the subject of UFOs is right at the heart of what we study here on this program, because it introduces all the things about black projects and the aerospace connections and those aerospace defense contractors who have tremendous geopolitical control, including the control of all the databases in government, which is a tremendous amount of knowledge and also power for stonewalling, for example. So this is that very intense place of power, which we've seen in action, and particularly since the Kennedy assassination. This is how far back we need to go when we look at this, because if you're going to get a grasp on it, you have to see the genesis of it with the National Security Act coming into the Eisenhower years, and then the battle, the major showdown in the Kennedy years, and specifically over the UFO file. And then after that goes underground, there's another tug of war with Nixon underground again, another tug of war with Reagan, convincing Reagan there's an alien threat. He develops SDI, and Reagan comes up tonight because of the COG research that we're doing. But I think if we're going to get a clear handle on things, a couple of acronyms, SDI and COG, are going to help us a whole lot coming up. Everyone, this is a special report going deep now, and it's great to have so many of you here with us. It's Welcome to the X Blackout, NASA Religion and Continuity of Government. We're going to discuss the continuity of government aspect using the work of Professor Peter Dale Scott, who, in my opinion, is the real foundational study if we want to understand the deep state and emergency powers, because that's exactly what he's looked into and warned of the excesses involved with it. And I think that we have some kind of imitation Professor Scott's out there, and one of them writes for Newsweek magazine. And he does all the same type of research, but he never goes into those dark corners to really find out who's pulling the strings of this entirely unseen government. And it is a crucial factor. But as we come to the end of 2021 here, going into 2022, I wanted us to kind of get our heads on straight for going into this new year and to spend a little bit of time with you. So it's great to have you all out there. I see a lot of familiar faces. Now, let's keep going. So I'm going to read the story as it was portrayed originally when it was leaked about the NASA religion aspect. Then we're going to go into APs trying to debunk it, which is pretty miserable. It's a pretty weak attempt, I have to say. And you have to wonder exactly what the problem was that they were having in relation to this. Okay, so now here we are. This is The Hill. Religious experts have examined how each of the world's major religions may respond to news that intelligent life exists on other planets, one religious scholar said. One of the things that we brought up, I think it's X episode 113, but it's the Danica episode where we highlight the Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, and the strange habit out of nowhere that Stepford Biden, President Biden, got into, started talking about Satchel Paige and how we went into very deep analysis of how Satchel Paige means Mars, discovery on Mars. And the reason that Satchel Paige means that is because in 2006, they did all these programs and they decided to name all these different major pieces of Mars after major characters on the what they called the Negro baseball leagues in the 1940s. That's the term that they used for them. And Satchel Paige was, of course, basically a Hall of Famer in that league. And out of nowhere, we've got Biden, when he met the Pope, he's sitting there and he starts mindlessly talking about Satchel Paige. And then when he's giving a speech at the UN, it's Satchel Paige this and Satchel Paige that. It makes absolutely no sense unless you're well-versed in steganography, and then the whole thing starts to open up. As I've pointed out, steganography can work like the Rosetta Stone. I mean, really, there's really a way to use it where it's helpful, and it's a little bit different than cryptography. And we've discussed those subtle differences. And one of the reasons I stress steganography is because it's so out there in the open that we deal with it all the time. And in particular, you know, the ex-steganography in relation to advanced technology projects that go through different government agencies, that is very important to be able to decipher. But it's a very easy one to track back because we have something close to 300 examples of these programs that would fit into that, where they're moving with this advanced technology. And the way it works in groups like the Central Intelligence Agency, you can't get 8,000 agents in and brief them all on one thing that you're doing because then you're letting too much information out. So you need to operate in compartmentalized groups. But one of the things that you can do, and which is very successful, is you can have them all following a project based on its designation, its steganography, in this case, ex-steganography. And many of the projects that we've seen that are public projects have now been turned into what? Private projects. So we've taken all of this incredible assets from the American populace and people around the world. We've created this tremendous space infrastructure. And then what's happened? Now it's being privatized and SpaceX is going up there and Bigelow and all of these other major space corporations, that's all privatized. So now the citizens who paid into that program, whose parents paid into that program, whose grandparents built NASA, they don't have anything to say. This is part of the problem with the way that the governance structure is working in America and particularly and around the world, which is we're in a schizophrenic situation where we have to look at things like the fact that we haven't gone to the moon in 50 years, for example, and just accept it as like, well, I guess there's a good reason, although it makes absolutely no sense that we've had no manned missions to the moon since 1972. There's no logical reason except for the fact that they developed a secret space program and they continued to do it using the public funding. So this comes right into the heart of this when we're talking about NASA and NASA's religion, because they do want to control this aspect. You know, they want to be able to reinvent that human story. And one of the things that they may be working on right now with these theologians is what's a good comparable story to Genesis story that we can make up for Mars, for example, so that we can finally show that the ruins on Mars, which I'm sure do exist, and people like Richard Hoagland and other people Even Joseph Farrell has done research on that. So what happens if you find ruins on another planet? Does that destroy the structure? Well, it gives them an opportunity, because they're not transparent, the people who are operating programs like NASA, it gives them the opportunity to spin it a particular way. And this is the narrative building is the hardcore piece. And what they utilize intelligence and counterintelligence people to do this, along with people in all these different various sectors. But fundamentally, the job, the responsibility falls on the Central Intelligence Agency. That's why they have so much control over the media. That's why they have so much control over entertainment media, movies, and the TV shows that we watch, because they're trying to build that subliminal impulse into our unconscious mind. And they have a lot of experience doing that with programs like, you know, MKUltra, for example, and the ones that they've moved into, you know, the EMKUltra and the entrainment technology that is used now. So when we look at these different things, we have to get up on a different level and be able to see, yes, we are being deceived. And it's not that you're supposed to be paranoid and not trust anything. It's just that we're supposed to see programs like the massive push for mandates and things like that as part of a psychological operation for tighter and tighter control as a small group works to try to control 7.5 billion people. And that ain't easy. Everyone, you're watching this special report with Dark Journalist, and we are getting now into this NASA theological push. Now I'm going to go back to how they were pushing the story again yesterday, and then some of the stranger aspects here. Scholar Reverend Dr. Andrew Davidson said his work focused on the connection between astrobiology and Christian theology and the prospect of there having been many incarnations of Jesus Christ. This is a real twist for them because, first of all, in the mystery schools, they teach all about reincarnation. And for example, in the Casey work, he actually has Adam as the first incarnation of Jesus. If you think about that, it gets very interesting. And Adam as Emilius, who is kind of the Atlantean version of Adam. So throughout Blavatsky's work, Theosophy and Anthroposophy, you have a structure of reincarnation and then major saints and major religious figures reincarnating. For example, John the Baptist reincarnates as the painter Raphael in Steiner's cosmology. So that's a major kind of piece that's built in there. Fundamentally, in the Bible itself, reincarnation was included. But by the time you got to Origen in the 4th century AD, they decided this is not what we want in there. And so they took it out. So the mystical, the kind of esoteric side of Christianity always included it. And the mystery schools preserved that aspect. So when we see them talking about incarnations of Jesus, they're drawing directly on their mystery school knowledge to do this. The fact that they're opening up about this publicly is part of the problem, I think, and why they're trying to deny this story. Davidson says in an upcoming book that a large number of people would seek religious guidance should aliens ever be discovered. This has always been the fundamental question. You know, would everyone who's religious lose their mind if they found out that there were aliens out there? And they did a study on this, the Brookings Institute in the early 60s under President Kennedy. And they decided the Brookings Institute recommendation was that the society would not be able to comprehend it. Now, that could have been a very self-serving report in order to keep the kinds of technology and, you know, the various discoveries. There's so many discoveries involved with the UFO and the X technology that go far beyond just can you get a faster rocket or anything like that. There's energy implications. There's medical implications. You know, you get the kind of advanced technology working, advanced science, and that's the way science works. You get a couple of people working together. One guy discovers something, everyone else builds off his work and so on. If you cut off that channel, if you have a curve then from what you're going to reveal, you start building an entirely different society. And that's what we've seen largely. So when we're talking about the UFO file and the X technology, we're not just talking about the ability to have, you know, supersonic flying saucers and things of this nature. We're talking about the ability to actually transcend the physics that we understand. And that includes in the various arenas. And I'm sure it includes things like age extension technology, for example. One of the things that I was talking to Catherine Fitz about recently is that she was saying, look, part of their problem is they've come to a point where they have age extension technology. They have the ability to live to 150 years old. And if you have these people like Kissinger and, you know, Gates living to 150 while the rest of the population is dying in their 70s, if they're lucky, right? If they're not being rolled over by some lockdowns and their businesses aren't being shut down, then, you know, we're looking at a very different scenario. So she's saying that part of this control thing is that they want to introduce themselves and say, look, you know, we don't care if the public, you know, we're going to create this two-tiered society where we, the elite, have access to this stuff and they don't, because they're not going to be able to maintain a planet of all these people living to 150 years. That's where they're coming from. So inevitably, this question about religion in relation to the UFO file is a crucial piece. Let's go further with the article. Two dozen theologians participated in a program funded partially by NASA to research how humans may react to news that intelligent life exists on other planets. And this religious scholar says he was recruited into it. Okay, so that's his first person testimony. That's a very crucial thing. Before they started to try to, you know, push this story down, this guy has already been in there. So the Reverend Dr. Andrew Davison, University of Cambridge over there in the UK, not Cambridge here, in a recent interview that he was among 23 other theologians in a NASA-sponsored program at the Center for Theological Inquiry at Princeton University from 2016, 2017. This is very recent, just before they started to push the UFO file and the New York Times and the phony TTSA CIA operation, which still has Elizondo and Chris Mellon out there. They were the kind of stragglers from the first fail operation. Davison said he and his colleagues examined how each of the world's major religions would likely respond if they were made aware of the existence of aliens. His own work focused on the connection between astrobiology and Christian theology. Will Storer, director of the CTI, said NASA wanted to see serious scholarship being published in books and journals addressing the profound wonder and mystery and implications of finding microbial life on another planet. Now, here's the thing. They've already found that. They've already found ruins. They already have a program that's at least 50 years beyond what they've been telling the public, because the paid-for, reported-on programs ended in 1972. So the public's loop has been gone, and we've been locked into these things about shuttles and, you know, very low-level stuff. You know, oh, we had orbiter on Mars, you know, I mean, we're getting the equivalent of a complete whitewash in relation to the field of study of space. And part of the reason that the secret space program answered a lot of questions is because Gary McKinnon, who is referred to as the NASA hacker over there in the UK, he, and by the way, the United States wanted him badly, you know, not on the level of Assange, but it was brought up during a meeting with Obama. So when Obama went over there, so they really wanted this guy. They wanted to see what he had his hands on. What he was able to do fundamentally is discover that there was an off-world officers list. So that we had a program out in space that had nothing to do with anything that we knew about in the public sphere, because we don't know anything about off-world officers. We know about training for space and we know about astronauts, but there's no off-world officer list officially. So the fact that there was a very detailed, intense list that looked like basically, you know, the same way you'd look at a list of Navy officers proves that there's an entirely different program. Now, what happens when Trump gets into office is he creates the Space Force and the Space Force, and the Space Force is the sixth branch of the armed services. Now, they hadn't introduced a branch of the armed services for something like 70 years. So this was an extreme move. Now, if you look at that, and then we move into things that they're doing now, like the Gillibrand Amendment, and this is Kristen Gillibrand, who is the senator in New York, who suddenly became this incredible UFO advocate. It's like the most passionate thing in her life now. And she had nothing to do with it ever before, but they figured she's a good face for it somehow. And then they started to have her tag team with Avril Haines. So they're trying to put this woman's face on disclosure, I think, because when they were coming out with Elizondo and all that stuff, it wasn't flying because, you know, Elizondo is such a public liar. I mean, he's a counterintelligence agent anyway, but he had lied so often in the public that it just seemed like he was a good liar. And I think they started to look at this and reason among themselves, you know, we need something to bring some credibility and maybe we can be like, hey, it's women in space. But part of what is going on with the ASRO and the Gillibrand push is that they were able to hold up the entire defense budget, which is the NDAA. And this now, they ended up signing it close to $800 billion, okay, with a B. And for a country that's not at war, that's extraordinary. Most estimates for what we should be doing in relation to our military budget is about half that. So there's an extra $400 billion in pork on the surface, never mind what we don't see in black projects, because everything that you see is an allocated dollar in government around this. You take the black project part and times it probably by four or five times. So it's a pretty extreme amount of money on the books. And one of the things that happens inside of that NDAA is there's a clause that every president has to sign on to, which is the September 11th emergency clause, which includes continuity of government. Now, before the September 11th attacks, we never had that. So Clinton didn't have continuity of government powers and so on. They weren't active. They were there in theory, just like Reagan and Oliver North created. So this is a very important part as we go into 2022. We need to be aware of the emergency powers and how they've been misused during this, you know, lockdown crisis and the whole frenzy that they've been trying to push on this side. This is crucial for us because the continuity of government rules are so secret that it completely obliterates the Constitution and any concept of democratic living in society. It literally creates martial law and a fascist state overnight. Now, those rules, and we've covered them in this program, but just briefly, those rules came into being as a result of the fact that the Eisenhower administration wanted something in case there was a first strike by the Soviet Union. They wanted a fully functioning underground body that was a government. And they wanted them to have the ability to have sustainable food, living, and everything else. They basically created an entire underground civilization for this very purpose. And what happened was certain individuals got involved with COG that were ambitious about how they could use that in relation to what was happening in the public civil life. And so we got all these incursions on the policy side based on COG things, which we couldn't see, including the Kennedy assassination, Watergate, and other things. What Professor Scott refers to as deep events. And what he found in his research, which I think is so crucial when you look at it, is that most of the people involved in some of the very important deep events from JFK all the way through to 9/11, the financial coup d'etat of 2008, this whole thing that we're seeing, even Iran-Contra and the October surprise, they all had COG emergency planning connections. And that gets very significant because they've been building then an infrastructure and they've been causing social change based on that infrastructure. Now, the way they were able to get that structure to be so secret was to say, well, look, if the Soviets discover what our plans are to survive a nuclear war, we're finished because then they'll have the upper hand. So they were able to introduce something outside of constitutional transparency. And they use the intelligence agencies to do that. So COG is a very unusual branch of government. What happened in the 80s with Reagan and Oliver North, and I think this is really the crucial period for how we understand COG today, is that North said, well, look, what you want to do is introduce COG, not just in the event of a nuclear emergency, but any emergency. And that was undertaken. Remember, North's boss was George Bush the first, President Bush, who was VP under Reagan. That crucial change from nuclear emergency to emergency gave us all the kind of the fundamentals for all the problems that we're seeing now. We have these crazy governors coming forward and saying, I'll put you under martial law if you don't close your business and things of this nature. Or if you, you know, you're under an emergency rule to do whatever we say and you can't go to this gym because you're under emergency rule. So it gives them a whole set of powers. There's nothing in law. There's no force of law in any of the mandates, but nonetheless, the emergency powers, the mere idea of the emergency powers codified in COG gives them law on that federal level if they call martial law. This is what their end game is, I think, for so much of the things that they're pulling. If they encounter enough resistance, I think the continuity of government aspect comes into play. It came up heavily in Trump's last year in office, and they were thinking, this is how we'll get rid of him, before they decided to just, hey, ho, we'll rig the election. It's a lot easier. And Trump was very aware of the continuity of government rules as well. And part of the secrecy that exists in relation to that space infrastructure comes directly from this underground infrastructure that we utilize in America. So this piece of continuity of government, the underground government, they were able to constitutionally say, you know, we're going to adopt secrecy rules that say for national defense purposes, no one can talk about this. So when they went into space, they basically just flipped the operation and said the same thing applies to space. That's why you have 50 years and no intel leaking about what happened to 50 years of space exploration. And this is where we get into the oddness of what they're trying to do with creating a human origin story based on findings on Mars. And that's why they're calling in these theologians. So they've already been working with theologians probably since the 1950s on this, developing the right narrative. So the fact that this is breaking now and it's starting to come out means it's not that it's happening now, it's that it's been happening a long time. They're ready to talk about it now because they have something they're ready to try. And this gets into the whole UFO threat operation. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We're going deep here on the continuity of government, the UFO file, and welcome to the blackout of 2022. This is where they're heading, and maybe we can head them off. I want to remind everyone to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for the newsletter there. That keeps us in touch with the intense, you know, censorship that we've been seeing, which is just off the charts. And basically, the newsletter is free. It just keeps us in touch with each other and around these social networks in case they decide, hey, you know what? We're going to pull a Robert Malone on this guy and just get rid of me. They did that with Dr. Malone, who's the inventor of the mRNA technology. Twitter silenced him yesterday. And he had 500,000 followers on there. And, you know, it's interesting because this is a guy who can speak on every medical level about this. And there's no good reason whether someone agrees with his conclusions or not. I mean, this is the guy who invented mRNA. So obviously, they have an agenda there, and they're in a peak period of trying to push everything that they're trying to do with these waves and the whole pharma takeover. So we're right in the middle of that. They have to kind of get rid of these voices. Well, in relation to the work that we do here, they've banned some videos over time on different networks, but we've been lucky enough to be here and be here with you. And we're very happy to be here with you and everyone in the Ideas Room, because this is the kind of conversation that they don't like to see happen. Because when we get together and we reason things out and we go through the different scenarios, then all kinds of different things start to happen and the narrative gets outside of their control. They get very worried about that. So a good way to keep us in touch is that newsletter. And basically, it shows up once a week and lets you know what incredible programs that we have lined up for you for 2022. And I can tell you right now, there's some exceptional interviews and X-Series episodes coming up for you. So make sure you're on board with that. Okay. So let's go into the pushback against this narrative. There's more that they have to say about the theologians. And this guy Davidson, his a book that's coming up, it's Astrobiology and the Christian Doctrine. Okay. According to a portion of Davidson's book obtained by the Times, a large number of people would turn to their religious traditions for guidance if aliens were ever discovered. Quote, detection of alien life might come in a decade or only in future centuries or perhaps never at all, but if or where it does, it will be useful to have thought through the implications in advance. Yeah, that's the very subtle thing. And then what happens? Next year, they hit you over the head with the UFO threat. So that got around, and I think that the buzz that it was causing was substantial enough for there to be all these denials coming from all these different channels. And they didn't know how to put the genie back in the bottle in relation to this. It's quite fascinating to see them scramble. And, you know, you have to kind of love it when they weasel like that. But here's the height of that weaseling. NASA hasn't hired theologians to study reaction to alien life. That's AP. So they enlisted a pretty big news organization. Let's see what they have to say. AP's assessment, it's false. NASA has not hired any theologians to study the potential reaction humans would have to the discovery of alien life. NASA provided some funding in 2015 to the Center for Theological Inquiry in Princeton, New Jersey, for a program to study the potential societal impact of finding life beyond Earth. It's the same exact thing. The NASA-funded portion of the program ended in 2017. Yeah, well, they got all the information that they needed. I'm sure that they got all the information they needed on this probably in the early 1960s. One tweet that was shared nearly 25,000 times, oh, shut down that Twitter account, made the joke that the so-called NASA hires were planting the seeds for the main storyline of 2022. Now, this is what they're worried about because they've got a storyline and they can't have the bag, you know, this thing leap out of the bag prematurely. So they've really got a problem here, and they've enlisted AP and some others to do a hit job on the things that have come out. But fundamentally, in the hit job itself, they can't deny the story. They just term it a little bit differently. They're like, NASA funded it, but they didn't hire it. Okay, while the agency's astrobiology program did grant money to the Center for Theological Inquiry, frequently referred to as CTI, to assess societal implications for NASA's astrobiological and search for life efforts, NASA was not involved in the selection of researchers, according to an agency spokesman. The fellows worked independently through the center and were not considered NASA employees. That doesn't mean anything. So, okay, so you contracted them to do it. They weren't official employees. So this is a really lousy debunking, and the story stands just as strong as when it was released. The question is, who was the group that released it? In other words, we know this guy was writing a book, but who allowed this to get around? And then who's the group that's running around trying to shut it down? There you see what we refer to on this program as the X-Share group and the X-Protect group. So the X-Share group says we need to move the culture forward. And it has its genesis in people like James Forrestal, for example. X-Share, as we've termed it in the program, is sometimes referred to as X-Reveal, where they want to reveal these things and have the culture have a whole understanding. One of the reasons, supposedly, that Forrestal was forced out a window at Bethesda Hospital and before that gave JFK such a leg up on the UFO issue was because he wasn't comfortable as the first defense secretary with withholding that type of information from the American people and the world. So there's sort of a fundamental issue there of transparency. And in that period, they decided, you know, well, we have a group here, it's X-Protect, we're going to protect it at any cost. It's too late to discredit this guy, although they were pushing that. They decided we just have to get rid of him. He knows too much. Interesting thing about Forrestal as well, as the head of Dylan Reed, he was somebody who understood the Wall Street side. And this is what is fundamental and I think comes directly out of Professor Scott's research, and is we need to put it straight center when we deal with the UFO file and the CIA, which is the CIA is an organization founded by Wall Street lawyers. Not great military minds, not strategic spy masters. Wall Street lawyers who dealt in international finance for Sullivan and Cromwell, S&C, in New York City. That's the foundation of the Central Intelligence Agency. And eventually, you know, they would recruit for cosmetics, you know, some generals and things like that. But basically, it's a bunch of lawyers. And it's lawyers who would exploit loopholes in international law and get around things in order to move money different places and then be able to come back to the government and say, since we've moved money to this place, you need to move military might into this place. And by the way, this guy doesn't agree with us, so let's create an operation to remove him, and we'll create all different types of executive action around the world. So the big reveal on what the Central Intelligence Agency is and what it does is going to help us a lot in relation to the UFO file, because all the people that have been coming forward on the UFO side since 2017 are all intelligence people of one stripe or another, mostly CIA. And one of the things I mentioned about the To the Stars Academy is that the board itself had over 100 years of experience, CIA experience, with really top CIA people like Jim Semivan, who recently went on a program, and he was questioned about this aspect of the Central Intelligence Agency creating a PSYOP in relation to UFOs. And he said, oh, that's illegal. The CIA wouldn't do that. You know, so this is the kind of line they think that they can get away with. And what was particularly interesting to me is that, you know, we mentioned when we do historical retrospectives in relation to Garrison and his battles over the UFO file with the CIA in relation to his assassination work and the cases he was prosecuting, Rampart's Magazine. And I found it really interesting that this guy, Semivan, was started to talk about Rampart's Magazine, which, you know, went out of business in like 1975. Or something. And I had to say, boy, this is like a weird, you know, answer to some of the things that we've raised out there. But that whole group, there's a kind of a creepy thing around this group from the CIA that came forward and said, not only are we CIA people and we love you and we want to give you the truth, but we're also experiences ourselves. We've had our own abduction experiences. That kind of thing, when you get into that, and the level of psychological manipulation that an agency like the Central Intelligence Agency does, you just stay far, far away from anything like that if you're any kind of respectable researcher, if you want anything near the truth. You know, you're much better getting a direct story of somebody's UFO sighting or experience. And the CIA thing always has an aspect of manipulation to it. What they're trying to do is create with the defense contractors like Lockheed Martin this worldwide UFO threat idea, narrative, and they want it to stick. And they, you know, their first run of that since 2017 hasn't gone as well as they wanted it to. Mostly, I think, because of the players that they had involved. You know, they had in intelligence terms, you have something that is referred to as a Bobo. And what they do is you make the Bobo, you blow up the Bobo to a point where he becomes the main person and spokesman for what you're doing. But as soon as you need to run out on that app, you let the air out of the Bobo. And that, so DeLong was the Bobo for the TTSA situation. And what they've done is they got a lot of market research data and they did a lot of data mining from people reading these articles. And if you go back and you look at certain types of statistics, for example, from 2018, you're going to find that the number one search on Google in 2018 was UFOs. So they knew somewhere in that period that they needed to use that interest that the public had and say, look, we have all this technology, we've developed this whole thing. This UFO threat idea can give us complete emergency control. Now, a lot of people in looking at the UFO threat aspect just think, oh, you know, big deal. Somebody like Elizondo's out there pumping his own horn and the CIA is getting him book contracts and things like that. It's actually a lot deeper because it's a program that's been in process for decades. And the UFO threat is, there's such a warning that needs to be had by people, because the media will get on board with the threat idea because they are completely under the sway of the Central Intelligence Agency. It's been proven for years that the CIA has incredible control of the media. So that's a dangerous control. And if their object is to get that type of control over society in order to take this sprawling mass of 7.5 billion people and get them to, you know, stay in their homes or accept a UBI and not start small businesses anymore, so they can just enjoy the fruits on top and have these, you know, kind of slave class, then it's pretty easy to create this fear. I mean, there was a tryout, an unusual tryout in 1938 with the War of the Worlds scenario. And I imagine the people who put that together, whether or not it was funded specifically for that purpose, and we know the Rockefellers were around it, and Orson Welles was such a young, new talent at the time, I think he would have taken any job that came along. And he did a great job with it. But one of the interesting things about that is they would get a lot of information about that back then in 1938. And they had people really freaking out, jumping out windows and things like that. And so we know that that type of panic idea exists. They've looked at it in terms of the nuclear factor as well. So they have a number of different scenarios. And when they're looking at contingency plans, if their pharma takeover doesn't work, you know, and I've pointed this out before, if you thought the COVID op was something, just wait till you get to the UFO op. Because this thing not only goes through religion, it goes through technology, it goes through the human origin story, it goes through your spiritual life. You know, this is a lot bigger than, you know, the fascist mandate thing, which is already an incredible affront to freedom-loving humanity anywhere. But the UFO threat in particular, I think, is something that for 2022, we need to just keep our eye on it and bring forward the information and immediately debunk these types of CIA operations. And when we have those researchers who go along with the UFO CIA op, we just start to see that split between real research, which is the UFO file research, which has a great foundation, like I said, in John Mack, Jim Mars, Stanton Friedman, just hardcore people, that you want that split when it happens to be easy to identify so that it's not confusing. Because when people approach the subject who are just normal people and have never, you know, gone deep in it, the last thing in the world that you want them to do is come up to it through the doorway of the Central Intelligence Agency, which is an extra-constitutional agency and operates outside of the law completely, to the point where the people in charge, you know, what you would say presumably in charge of the government, when they look at the CIA, they can't rein them in. So they either cooperate with them or they're out. And one of the things I will say in relation to President Trump is he did not cooperate with the Central Intelligence Agency very often. And they worked to get him out for most of his administration. So whether you like Trump or not, you know, the idea that some agency somewhere can just decide to get rid of a president, as they did in 63, is still something that's unaddressed. So it leaves us in a kind of upside down genesis since 1963, and it goes on because, you know, there's no reconciliation for what happened at the time, which was that the Central Intelligence Agency got into a war with the presidency, and they decided, we're not going to have this guy sharing the UFO file, and we're going to take him out. So that is a banana republic. I mean, it's the definition of a banana republic. It's funny because if you go back into that period, you can see the Central Intelligence Director, Alan Dulles, saying the most important thing that we need to do in coming through with this committee of the Warren Commission is to make sure that the public understands that we are not a banana republic. Because he'd been in charge of overthrowing, you know, our bends in Central America. And, you know, that's what they did, basically, is they assassinated these guys and installed their guys. And then they just took that process that they were using overseas and brought it back here. So it's interesting. Historically, we get a chance to address the things that in that period of time, they didn't have the courage or the support to do. But it is a crucial factor, because you can see when we get to these levels in society like we are now, it gets down to literally how we live our lives, how people raise children and raise families, and are they going to be under medical dictatorships, for example. That's one aspect. But, you know, the surveillance aspect goes even deeper than that. So it is a core aspect of how you will be free in your life. And whenever we get around those questions, when you have this huge agency that's operating without any checks and balances, and then behind them, you have other agencies like Homeland Security with 250,000 employees. You think they need 250,000 employees? That organization didn't even exist until the September 11th attacks. So we're existing in a September 11th infrastructure, and this is part of the different things. And that brings me to some key quotes that I wanted to mention on continuity of government planning. And this is how they supplant the U.S. Constitution. And these are some quotes from Professor Scott that I think will open us up on this. And maybe if we start to get this deep state angle and apply it on things like the UFO file, we're going to have a much better place to go, because for some reason, the people on the UFO side, they're just looking for some kind of validation from the government. And you can't get caught in a trap like that, because the government will give you exactly what you're looking for. And, you know, and it won't be the truth. That's part of the problem. All right. This is Professor Scott talking about 9/11. Quote, clearly 9/11 met the conditions for the imposition of the continuity of government measures. And we know for certain that COG planning was instituted on that day in 2001, before the last plane had crashed in Pennsylvania. The 9/11 report confirms this twice on pages 38 and 326. It was under the auspices of COG that W. Bush stayed out of Washington on that day, and other government leaders like Paul Wolfowitz were swiftly evacuated to Site R, inside a hollowed-out mountain near Camp David. What few have recognized is that nearly a decade later, some aspects of COG remain in effect. Okay, this was written in 2011. COG plans are still authorized by a proclamation of emergency that has been extended each year by presidential authority, most recently by President Obama in September 2009. It was just affirmed by President Biden in December, signing the NDAA. So the continuity goes on. Trump signed it also all through his term, and Obama continued to sign it. At the same time, we have seen the implementation of the plans outlined in 1987, the warrantless detention that Oliver North had planned for in a program called Rex 1984. This is the idea of rounding up citizens who are dissidents in the event of a war and putting them into camps and things of this nature. That program is called Rex 84, and it was an exercise that Oliver North did under Vice President Bush. The warrantless eavesdropping that is their logical counterpart, and the militarization of the domestic United States under a new military command, NORTHCOM. This is what we don't understand. NORTHCOM is who would take over in the event that continuity of government gets activated. NORTHCOM, I've pointed out their commanders before, but this command didn't even exist before. So Bush created this thing out of whole cloth. So, and we can see there's a strange tie-in too, because Commander Van Herk, who is in charge of NORTHCOM now, he was the leader of the 509th Bomb Group. And that's the same group through the lineage that discovered the Roswell wreckage. I mean, that's one hell of a coincidence. At the same time, okay, so we've seen this militarization in domestic United States under a new military command, NORTHCOM. Through NORTHCOM, the U.S. Army now is engaged with local enforcement to control America in the same way through CENTCOM, it is engaged with local enforcement to control Afghanistan and Iraq. So basically, we use these big commands to control places like South America or war zones like Afghanistan and Iraq. And now we have NORTHCOM to control us. that didn't exist before. Okay. Through NORTHCOM, the U.S. Army now is engaged with local enforcement to control America the same way the CENTCOM, C-E-N-T-C-O-M, is engaged with local enforcement to control Afghanistan and Iraq. We learned that COG planning was still active in 2007 when President Bush issued National Security Presidential Directive 51, NSPD 51. This, for the sixth time, extended the 1 year of emergency proclaimed in the September 14th, 2001 Act. It empowered the president to personally ensure continuity of government. In the event any catastrophic emergency happened, he announced NSPD 51 contains classified continuity annexes, which shall be protected from unauthorized disclosure. Under pressure from 9/11 Truth constituents, Congressman Peter DeFazio of the Homeland Security Committee twice requested to see those annexes. The second time in a letter signed by a chair of his committee, his request was denied. And so this gets into the whole National Emergencies Act. We're going to have to get our minds oriented around the emergency powers, and we're going to have to defang the emergency power apparatus if we're going to move into, you know, kind of a more prosperous, freedom-loving future, because the emergency powers is how they're doing all this stuff. When you see them grabbing people in Australia, which, by the way, Australia is an international crisis and should be brought before the UN and every other country, and their leadership should be held accountable immediately for the things that those people are going through. But this is how they do it. They do it through the emergency. In this case, they're using the medical emergency idea, and they're creating all of these rules around that that just don't exist. So they could do this in relation to a nuclear attack. They could say, well, there's a nuclear thing, or there's a dirty bomb that got released, and we get to implement all these emergency powers. Now, there's no strict protocol for this in the public. We don't understand the kind of powers that they get. They seem to have the idea that they can just eliminate the Constitution when it comes to these emergencies. But the continuity of government is the keystone. This is the one that they've been building for years. They've got the real infrastructure for it. And we can see that through the emergency powers, this is the stuff that they really feel the free exercise. This is what gives them the ability to say, hey, everybody wear a mask, you know. And now they're hinting around that you're going to need a vaccine just to get on an airplane. All this stuff is completely illegal. So, you know, if we need to get, there are legal experts who are out there who are showing in, you know, what a fraud so many of these emergency powers acts are. And a number of politicians have gotten into trouble using them. For example, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Andrew Cuomo, all use these emergency powers. And we see over and over again, it is blue state governors doing it. The red state governors, whatever you think, if you're a Republican or Democrat, Green Party or whatever, all that counts is that the people involved, whatever stripe they are, observe the Constitution. All the emergency powers acts, you know, from Oregon to California, through Michigan to Massachusetts, they're all completely, they have no force of law behind them. So, you know, I'll speak about it in terms of a U.S. problem, but as we mentioned, Australia, Germany, France, the U.K., forget it. The U.K., if you look at what's happening there and how Boris Johnson has betrayed his entire constituency by coming in and saying, you know, I'm a freedom-loving conservative, and then bowing to all these tyrannical moves in relation to COVID and lockdowns and mandates and all the rest of it. I mean, we're looking at a worldwide catastrophe on this, but it's all based, again, on the emergency planning. When they go into, and it's hard to wrap our heads around it now, but look how they're promoting the UFO threat idea. When we go into that aspect, that's when they can really use the emergency power, COG, continuity of government power. And we've demonstrated on this program at the end of the Trump administration in October, they tried to do it to Trump when he got COVID. And he recovered so quickly that they weren't able to pull it off. And as soon as the election was over, what does Trump do? He fires Mark Esper, who was the defense secretary. And Esper was behind the effort at installing continuity of government. One of the things I want to point out was strange in that era, and it was so, like, you know, unreal in a way, because I'd been reading about in very obscure journals by Professor Scott, continuity of government. And the thing was, you couldn't bring it up publicly. So when you are in a congressional session, for example, they couldn't mention a continuity of government. In 1987, it happened with Oliver North. He brought it up and everybody jumped up and said, you can't mention that. So now it got to a point where Nancy Pelosi was like, hey, I just talked, I got a briefing from continuity of government. And, you know, they told me how I'd become president if Pence and Trump both came down with COVID. I'm next in line. So I'm glad we didn't live through that disaster scenario. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report to wrap up 2021 and give us just a little insight on 2022 and the remarkable things that we see coming forward. Blackouts, we're going to get into that. Welcome to the X Blackout. That's a big piece of 2022, along with the UFO file and continuity of government powers. We will, we're going to be back a week from tomorrow with the X series, and we're going to be taking all your questions then. Of course, before we're done tonight, I'll take a couple out there and do a few shout outs. I got a couple of things to get to that I thought were of interest as well, and things to watch to just wrap us up here. 2022 preview. This is New Scientist. Large Hadron Collider will reach for the edge of physics. Okay, CERN is something that we keep close eye on here on this program with Dr. Farrell and Gigi Young and others. And one of the unusual things in a book called The Third Way that that Dr. Farrell got into was how CERN had a $6 billion budget, which is not a traditional scientific budget. It's more of a military-sized budget. And then he started to find out all these other unusual things, that CERN was an autonomous sovereign entity. And he was going into these cases where the scientists were suing CERN because they thought of it as a hazard, and they thought of their experiments with the Large Hadron Collider as an extreme hazard in the potential formation of black holes. So let's think about that for a minute, what they would call strangelets. So there's a case actually in the state of Hawaii in relation to this, even though CERN is all the way over in Switzerland. So we did the basic kind of fundamental examination of what they were doing there. There's all sorts of unusual things around the occult with CERN, including the creation of a CERN tarot deck and different rituals that have been filmed at CERN. There's just no question about it. This stuff is all on record. It's not very well explained. CERN itself is a nuclear agency there, and the Hadron Collider is one of the functions of the scientific arm of CERN. So the Hadron Collider, one of their things that had been coming up and which a lot of people were getting very paranoid ideas about, where they're channeling all these demons and all these demons are going to come through this portal through CERN. And the CERN people were laughing it off, ha, ha, ha. And I can appreciate it because a lot of it was over the top. However, think about this. In the background of all that and CERN is the setup for something called the MACI conferences. And we're going to do more reporting on this in 2022. But the MACI conferences understood the supernatural aspects very well and incorporated them into their scientific research. So much of CERN is born out of the MACI conferences. And CERN itself eventually came forward and said, well, in fact, in addition to doing all these things and trying to figure out how the Big Bang happened and discover the God particle, which was always the front, the MacGuffin story for what they were doing, it turns out that CERN actually was doing experiments to contact other dimensions. So for all those people who were paranoid about what they were up to, in fact, that's what they were trying to do. So now what happens is really interesting because CERN comes back and they say, well, We've been off for 3 years and we're turning it back on in 2022. And guess what? We went from a $6 billion budget to $20 billion. So now it's truly military size. And it's not, doesn't really answer any good questions because there's a problem here in relation to CERN. And the question, again, is that the surface aspect of them doing experiments, by the way, in 2018, they were the largest internet user on the planet. Think about that. But it ties in that CERN story with what they just did with the James Webb Telescope, which is another large-scale military size budget, $10 billion for a telescope. You might remember a story that we reported on last year, which was all about the Arecibo telescope there in Puerto Rico. And they had, you know, done all these renovations to it, and suddenly it just collapsed. And then there was fire. There was a lot of weird things. It looked exactly like sabotage. One of the interesting things about Arecibo is it was literally set up to watch the stars for potential alien activity. That was its scientific function. To see that thing destroyed and then the James Webb Space Telescope be the new thing that they send out there and spend $10 billion on is pretty interesting. But this title in the New York Times, Why the World's Astronomers Are Very, Very Anxious Right Now, the James Webb Space Telescope is endowed with the hopes and trepidations of a generation of astronomers. So this is interesting. What they're saying is, if all the steps succeed, what astronomers see through that telescope could change everything. They hope to spot the first stars and galaxies emerging from primordial fog when the universe was only 100 million years old or so. The entire astronomy community, given the broad range of anticipated science returns and discovery potential, has skin in the game with the telescope. An astrophysicist at Yale said, "We are all intellectually and emotionally invested." So they're launching this James Webb NASA telescope. Webb was the head of NASA under JFK. And this is interesting. They're using this thing at the same time this NASA story about the theologians and aliens comes up. So if you connect the dots here, this thing goes up into space. It spots an alien, you know, civilization. And then they have all these people set up who are theologians saying, oh, NASA talked to theologians to figure out how we would deal with this alien story. That's how those dots connect up for me with what they're doing there. And I think the sabotage of Arecibo was always a very unexplained story, makes a lot more sense now. Okay, we'll go a little bit further with this. And it has to do with this story in the war zone. Harassment of Navy destroyers by mysterious drone swarms off California went on for weeks, documents show. This is very interesting to me for a lot of reasons. Let's get into this for a second. So we have a series of these revelations there out of Coronado and San Diego that the Nimitz saw the Tic Tac and all these things back in 2004. And hey, guess what? That footage went up on YouTube in 2007, but it was also released by whistleblower Lou Elizondo in 2017. How does that make any sense? It doesn't. So the Tic Tac story has always been that weird story. And I've pointed out before that people who study physics, like Russell Targ, when they were looking at the Tic Tac, he was very clear to me. And I have that conversation with them, and it's part of a show that we did. He said, what you're looking at there is not what they're saying it is. So the Tic Tac was already manipulated footage anyway, whatever that was. This is part of another story that there were all these UAPs that were attacking this ship. They changed the language from UAP to drone. Then they were like mystery drones. Well, if you had mystery drones attacking your ships off of San Diego, you know, I mean, it's basically be a wartime act. So what was it that was going on there? I think that there was really a dry run going on there for an alien threat invasion scenario that they could say, oh, these things are attacking us. How did our crew respond and all the rest? Newly released documents obtained via the Freedom of Information Act show that the full scope of these drone incursions was greater than initially appeared. They persisted well after the Navy's investigation was launched. Deck logs indicate that drone sightings continued throughout the month of July 2019 and included events where drone countermeasure teams were called into action. One notable event involved at least three ships observing multiple drones. Uncharacteristically for unclassified deck logs, the details on this event are almost entirely redacted. So basically, it was a dry run scenario, and the scenario was there's a bunch of UAP, UFOs, attacking this destroyer. What does the destroyer do? So a lot of stories that we have out there are based on this drill of drones that have nothing to do with actual UFOs attacking anything. You might remember Jeremy Corbell, who's becoming like the carnival barker, the UFO thing. And he comes out and says, he's this filmmaker who's done, you know, the Lazar movie and others, and people are familiar with him in the field. But he comes out and says, oh, look, I got this special footage leaked to me, and it's this beach ball attacking these U.S. Navy destroyers. They were trying to lay this out there and see if they could get anything going. And then all of a sudden, Fox and CNN and all these people were citing Corbell directly, and the UAP task force supposedly were giving him this, you know, like, oh, it's hush hush, we're giving it to Corbell, and then he gives it to CNN. I mean, it was such a joke. First of all, a task force wouldn't give anything to Corbell, you know, that's all set up in advance because they want it out. But very often what happens in the media is you can't go directly from the UAP task force and then go directly to the media and say here, because then you're a direct source. So what happens is you give it to some other person, and then they can say, here, CBS, I got this from this UAP task force. And CBS can say, hey, this source here says he got it from those people, and so we can show it because, you know, it's on him if it's legit or not. That's the way that they skirt any kind of real examination of what it is, because they just say, well, we got it from this source who says he got it from them, and that's it. So you have to understand those types of degrees of how stories are created. For example, last December, there were all these stories that came up, and there was suddenly a website that was cited by CNN 24 hours after it was created. Now it's called The Debrief, and you know, those guys have been around for a while doing different types of things and creating, you know, all this stuff on Twitter. But it's not, you know, you're not going to create a website in 24 hours and then have CNN grab your footage from this. It's not going to happen. That whole thing was set up so that they could, again, have the plausible deniability of this website gave us that footage. That's why we're putting it out there. And all the while, the intelligence agencies behind the media outfits are testing and data mining the public's response to these things. And then at the end of the day, if they feel like the public is sensing a fraud, they can always be like, oh, you know, it was a beach ball of death. It was a dumb story, whatever it is, you know, it doesn't matter. Corbell was just a circus barker movie guy. So we have to understand the way that those stories come out. Unfortunately, you have people like Tucker Carlson at Fox who sits down and deals with Elizondo like his story is legitimate. That whole I'm a whistleblower thing with Elizondo is another one of these CIA fake outs. That whole story is ridiculous. So he's a paid CIA asset to come out and do a role. You know, he's under orders. And when I've invited him on this program for a gentleman's debate and things like that, those people go up a wall because he wouldn't last 2 minutes on this program, because all any of those hosts, George Knapp, Richard Dolan, or any of those people have to do is say, do you still have a relationship with the Central Intelligence Agency? Do you do contract work for them? Is any of that counterintelligence in your counterintelligence work if you're instructed to lie on behalf of the U.S. government, will you? All the answers to those questions have to be yes. Lou still works for the CIA. He still does counterintelligence, and counterintelligence agencies, if they are required to, will lie, because that's what counterintelligence is. So it's very easy, and that's the end of that op. So as we see TTSA go over the waterfalls here in 2021, and that's the end of that, in 2022, the remnants of that shouldn't still be leading that entire field of UFO research. It should now take a clean break and say, we don't want the CIA involved with this. Because now you have, with Kristen Gillibrand and the ASRO and this other office, which I refer to as annoying name anomaly, but it's the AOI, MSG, it's just ridiculous. So it's another one, and we're looking at what they're doing. And I have a real problem also with Gillibrand being involved, just like Marco Rubio, because they're both easily blackmailed. And their histories have both shown that. In relation to Gillibrand, it's her parents being involved with the Nexium sex cult. That's one. And Rubio, all of his bathhouse stories and things of that nature. So it's interesting that two very prominent politicians involved in this, you know, the UFO push, and suddenly they're incensed, you know, they're radicals for the UFO truth, you know. I mean, these people have just been picked out, profiled in order to lead this, but I find it disturbing that they're both very easily blackmailable based on their associations and their own past. So that's a problem. And then we have Gallego there in Arizona, and I pointed him out, and we did a number of things on him. And it's very clear that he was taught in psychological operations, but he's also one of the UAP guys on the Intelligence Committee. And this guy had a different name when he was here at Harvard, and his specialty was crowd control. So those types of examinations, when you take a deep look at it, you're not going to get any real UFO disclosure from these individuals, which are counterintelligence, psychological operations. It doesn't work that way. Those people aren't going to give you anything in the public's interest. They're going to give you something in the interest of creating a narrative. And that's just the way it works. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. Whew, well, we've touched on quite a few things leading up to 2022. I know it's going to be a great new year. And there's a lot of battles ahead, a lot of battles for transparency. We're going to get through it for sure. I want to thank everyone for joining me and for joining us here on the X series. We're going to be back with an X episode a week from tomorrow, and it's going to be a real barn burner. Make sure you're there. We also have some fantastic interviews coming up for you in January. So we're looking forward to you joining us. I want you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's a free newsletter. It keeps us in touch. And with all the incredible censorship that we see going on, that's the kind of thing that we really need, that direct pipeline with each other, because many of these platforms are here today, gone tomorrow. And I'm just glad that we're on right now and we're able to talk to you. It's a huge crowd tonight. And I know we have Kat Goida out there running the show in the ideas room. And I promise you next week, we're going to get to a lot of your questions. I have a couple more things before we close out tonight. This one really got me. And like I said, things heat up a lot at the end of the year. So it's Egypt breakthrough as man-made chamber found after scan of Great Sphinx. What does that sound like? Well, it sounds like the Hall of Records to me. So Edgar Cayce, now doing readings in the 1930s, he has such accuracy in his readings that some people who are interested in Egypt start coming to him and looking for different types of things about the pyramid. And he gives them this impromptu thing about the Atlanteans being legacy culture, hiding a Hall of Records directly under the Sphinx there at Giza. So on the plateau, and this Hall of Records, he said actually that there are three of them, and that one of them is off Bimini, and that another one is off the Yucatan. And the one that's in the Yucatan is in a pyramid, and that there's a pyramid off of Bimini, which contains the other Hall of Records. Now, what the Atlanteans kept in the Hall of Records, not only a history of their civilization, but also access to advanced technological work that they had, something called a two-eye stone. This is all in the Cayce readings, and we've brought it forward here during the years that we've been doing the X series. And it is very important. And I want to say in relation to Cayce, he spelled out the power source that they had. He called it T-U-A-O-I, two-eye. This is the nature of the power source in ancient technology that, that Casey was focusing on. So one of the things that has been out there for a while is this idea that under the paw of the Sphinx was an entrance to this Hall of Records. Although if you go deep into the Casey readings, he actually says that there's an entrance there, but the actual pyramid with the Hall of Records is between the Sphinx and the river. That part is often blown off. But anyway, here we were on Christmas Eve now. An Egypt researcher says a man-made chamber has been found below the Great Sphinx after a scan in the area uncovered a void below the surface in a video shared with Express. I think that you're going to be seeing some revelations around here. And one of the things that Gigi Young has warned us about, believe it or not, in relation to Atlantis, is that they're going to be, they have a false Atlantis disclosure program cooked up with their false UFO disclosure program. So we're going to be looking at both operations butting heads in 2022. That's real inside stuff. But nonetheless, everything in relation to our research in the hot zone there in the Caribbean and the Bimini in the Bahamas, you're going to see that research heating up as well. And we've made some playlists on the channel here in association with the Ernest Hemingway story in the hot zone and some of the really hardcore researchers like Paulina Zelitsky, who discovered an entire underwater city off the western tip of Cuba. That's going to come into very powerful focus because, again, it's going to deal with that human origin story. And we're just based on the mystery school histories of this, we're going to see that history is much richer than we imagine. I have to mention this one real quick because John Greenwald brought forward from the Black Vault, and of course, John's always done real good work over there. And I think he's been, you know, they call him a critic of Elizondo and others, but I think he's been really open-minded and incredibly fair with them. And I'm way more critical. And so John, I think, should shouldn't get a bad rap. But anyway, he came out with this great story, History Channel's Unidentified and a Secret Meeting Between Intelligence Officials Running ATIP, or was it? And this is very important because he exposed that a segment of their show, which remember, you know, the show, again, is an unusual aspect of this operation. It's gone now because it came in 53rd or something in the ratings there. And it was a terrible show. But it's interesting because they were portraying incidents as if they were actually occurring. And they said, we're having a meeting with these ATIP intelligence people. And then the people involved who were in the shot said, we were told we were supposed to come and meet intelligence people. So the whole thing is set up from beginning to end to look a certain way. And so Greenwald did a great job calling that out. But also, again, the duplicity of Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon and that whole thing about the TV series pushing these things, just like they said, oh, there was a UAP UFO that attacked an Italian helicopter. It's completely untrue. And then they went on to say that the UFO caused all these fires by shooting at houses in Italy. It just turned out it was an arsonist. There's it's on the record, that story, that an arsonist did all these fires. And the helicopter actually went down for human error. What's interesting is you have these genuine UFO sightings and you have people really, you know, going out of their way and going on the record with this. And then you have this kind of freak show CIA thing for television and to back up this UFO threat idea. So I think we need to be able to sort out the difference, but to be able to call out lies like that so that when people get together and are all chummy promoting, you know, like GQ did this thing with GQ hero Lou Elizondo, you know, the fact that they lied outright and it can be proven on their TV show, never mind the lies that come out of Elizondo's mouth since he started, that kind of lying needs to be called out. And, you know, I remember when, if we go back in time to what happened with the secret space program and the lies that people came out with that, we came on very strong to set the record straight. And in relation to this, everyone in the field should set the record straight that Elizondo, you know, was setting this up. And if Elizondo could come forward and say, well, you know, it wasn't me, it was the producer of the show, fine. But who was it who cooked up that phony segment on the History Channel Unidentified program? Because you portrayed it as actually happening. Now it's been exposed by the person who was involved is not what you said it was at all. And by the way, the whole thing about the Italian thing. So there's no accountability. This is my big problem around that. And I think that it's come to a point in the UFO field where the people who are on board with people like Elizondo are starting to look like they're doing it for TV shows or money or something. So it doesn't look legitimate to me. And I don't appreciate it because, you know, I've actually respected those people in the past. And for my own dealings with them, it does at least really kind of, you know, it's an uncomfortable place to have to call it out. I'd far prefer for those people to get back to the really good research that they were doing before the CIA circus came to town. So let's see. Let's see if 2022 holds that. Okay, wait, I got more. Get ready for the blackouts, Wall Street Journal. Mismanagement and the push for renewables are degrading the reliability of the U.S. energy grid. This is what they're going to be pushing, what you're going to be seeing more of. You know, somebody let out a video of Los Angeles, and all the power had gone out in Los Angeles two nights ago, and they said it was over a rainstorm. We've seen this before with the California fires, where they would shut off all the power. So there's something about the infrastructure and what they want to do with kind of what I would call the climate op. And the piece around blackouts, again, gives them emergency powers, because if you have those types of situations happening, suddenly it's a natural emergency. Oh, we get all these emergency powers. We can do all these things. You know, we can co-opt these houses. We can burn things down. We can shut off electricity. We can consolidate people in their homes, whatever it happens to be. Again, it's emergency powers getting us into those situations. So the blackouts have to be something that's really on the radar without a lot of fear porn and people saying, you know, and we've seen that before where people would come out and say, oh, there's going to be 10 days of darkness and all this nonsense. It's not that, but you have to be able to see the different levers of power that they can use, and the emergency powers being fundamental to where they find themselves in the midst of this op. Certainly the pharma takeover, it's the emergency powers that they've relied upon. Now what's the next step? Emergency powers for the climate, emergency powers, you can go nuclear with that. You could say there's a dirty bomb. You know, the UFO, UAP thing, that's all UFO threat. That gives complete emergency powers to fight a threat. So how far will they go with that? And how holographic will it be? These are the big questions going into 2022. But we've seen the kind of psychotic leadership on the top and the things that they will do to maintain power. Trust me, they will use these tools. And the more we have these conversations and call it out, the better off we're going to be. Finally, the Ghislaine Maxwell trial ended, and she was found guilty on 5 of 6 of the counts. There's a lot, really, really a lot in relation to Ghislaine and Maxwell, and the aspects that are understood in relation to the sex trafficking is one thing. The piece around the software, I don't think is so well understood, and I think a lot of people have tackled Epstein well on the alternative side. I give him a lot of credit for doing that. However, there's a piece that a number of people are not aware of, and it has to do with the Atlantis piece and the Atlantis obsession of Maxwell and Epstein. And this episode, which was X100, Ghislaine in the Hot Zone, that's part one. And I highly recommend that in light of her getting, you know, found guilty recently. It's very important that we understand the fuller extent of what she was doing with Terramar Project and how that was locked into looking for ruins in the Hot Zone in the whole geopolitical situation that we've outlined in relation to that. It's very well documented. And we're going to be opening that subject up on an entirely different level, including around Robert Maxwell, her dad, who was found dead under unusual circumstances, as we know, in the 90s, right there in the water. But what they're going to do with her and how the sentencing is going to go, and if she's going to, you know, if she's safe, and if she's going to sing, as it were, all these are great questions going into 2022. And I think that in some ways the trial was greatly rushed and that they want to do something to get her off of the world stage here. But let's remember that the last time she was trying to get off the world stage, what was the pseudonym that she was using? It was Janet Atlantis. Don't forget it. There's a huge potential in the story of Ghislaine Maxwell and her Terramar underwater project and the exploration of the hot zone Atlantean ruins and how they were taking a very exclusive group there to review those in these very interesting submarines named Atlantis, interestingly enough. So in part two of that, which is coming up sometime in the next month, we're going to dive deep into that. And I think that's a very important sentencing piece to watch in the aftermath, I think, of the Maxwell trial is absolutely key. And I think the media has done an incredibly superficial job of covering this. They've just got into the whole, you know, kind of like, oh, look, she helped procure girls for Epstein. I mean, there's a lot more involved in this. So that's something we can look forward to together. And as we go into the new year, we go into it with high hopes. I'm going to do a couple of shout outs here for people. I see Wally Tango Foxtrot, Hedy Lamarr, great actress, as we know. Renner Newton, wow, Jim Rockford, it's great people out there tonight. Ivan Langley, Deborah Blair, there she is. It's great to see you. Wow, Pono, Tanya, Don Newway, I know who that is. Been leaving some great comments lately. Thank you. Kat Goida, fantastic. Doing a great job in the ideas room. And I really appreciate you helping us out with these shows. Of course, we'll be having Miss Olivia come back next week. And we'll take your questions then for sure. Rockin' in the Rouse. I like that. Oh, right. Remember last week I learned how to highlight these comments? Fascinating. Let's see if I can still do that. Look at that. Check out my site, Chief. I like it. Scarlet Fire, Chris Bradley. It's great to see you. Brandy Renee. Oh, it's terrific to see everyone out there. Matt Black, you are a legend, DJ. You know, you can't not like a comment like that. Think about it. Kate's out there. It's great to see you. The Cove Channel. Jordan Banner. Fantastic. Atlantis is everywhere. I agree. Good comment. It touches all continents. The cataclysm that happened sent land in all directions from the center of the current position of the Atlantic. Absolutely. And Casey identified that Bimini stretch as Poseidia, and that was the last height of Atlantis, really. But it was definitely the height. That's where many of the hardcore pieces were coming from. Yes. The Wizard of Oz. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Happy New Year to you as well. We're going to have a fantastic 2022, and it's going to be challenging. There's no doubt about it. We're going to need every hand on deck to take care of it. All the incredible super chatters tonight, I appreciate your support. Fantastic. And, you know, to our subscribers as well. Keep up the great work, DJ and Olivia. Thank you. That's from Claire Cranmer. Thank you so much, Claire. And also we have great channel, happy coming new year. That is McGman80. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. And then Medley Childress. Thank you. Really appreciate the incredible support that you've given us all through the year. And it helps us to bring these reports to you and really dive deep. But that kind of backup really makes things go a lot better. So thank you so much. And to all our subscribers, wow, just terrific. Thank you, John. It's great to see you, sir. Gary Feltham, Ramona. I wanted to say, and you know, I get a lot of these, which is sometimes people ask me if they don't want to use PayPal, if they can send a check. And you can just send it to Dark Journalist at 1770 Massachusetts Avenue, number 238. And that's in Cambridge, Mass, 02140. And close enough to Avi Loeb's Harvard Astronomy Lab that we'll go over there with some cameras at some point, see what's going on. Thank you, Nancy. Really appreciate it. Great crowd in here tonight. Have a fantastic 2022, everyone. And from Olivia as well, we really appreciate all of the help that you guys have given us this year. Brandy Renee says, DJ owns the only suits that actually look comfortable. This one is, yeah, but you have to know how to, kind of relax in it. I think that's a big key. What's all this talk about Atlantis? That's a real good question. I would start with Edgar Cayce on Atlantis. That'll give you a real kind of snapshot on it. And then I would go into our Hot Zone playlist here on this YouTube channel. That'll give you a really deep look at the whole thing. And the Hot Zone is probably one of the most important pieces going forward that I think it has geopolitical aspects. It has ancient technology aspects. It has ancient, our whole ancient past wrapped up in it. I mean, it's just remarkable. Peace and love every day. I like that. Ivan Langley, sir. Very good. Fantastic crowd in here tonight. We will see you all on a week from Friday, and we have a special episode then for you. We will have some special interviews for you. We might have a surprise in between now and then as well, but have a very safe and happy 2022 and a fantastic New Year's weekend. And we'll be seeing you all in the new year on the other side. Thank you, Kat. I salute you. And been here for almost a decade. Fantastic. Thank you. We appreciate that. The Aborigines put the old... where did that go? That was an interesting comment. The Aborigines put the old Parliament House on fire in Australia. Whew! My goodness. Wow. There's so many things. There's so much power there in Australia on the side of the citizens. And if they can get some international support, they can definitely get some of those psychos out of power and get things back to normal down there. I am right there with you. And I'm looking to ways every day, trying to figure out how to get the word out about how bad things are in Australia. And I think America should lead the way by having a real strong push for freedom in 2022 and let that lead the way for the entire world. But everywhere you see people standing up and, incredible psychos trying to put them down, like Trudeau in Canada, for example. And, not to mention our friend who's running New Zealand right now, Jacinda. Whew. I mean, and these are all the World Economic Foundation people who were trained by Schwab. So yeah, no surprises there. Happy New Year, Carl. Thank you very much. Thank you, Cynthia. Great show as always. We really appreciate it. We will see you next week and have a fantastic evening, everyone. It's been great spending time with you. And we look forward to seeing you all again. And it says end broadcast, but after all, it never really ends. So we'll see you this next weekend. Have a great New Year's. Happy New Year, 2022. I like those numbers. Someone do the numerology on that and send it to me. I got to see it. Good night, everyone.